Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
How are you, Paul?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Are you feeling good about the Queen's birthday? I mean, public holidays don't really mean that much given everything that's going on, do they?
Well, I'm self-employed. And for everyone out there that is self-employed, they will appreciate the fact that, you know, when you don't work, you don't get paid. Unlike people that are on the government payroll that are at home today, or not at work, should I say, because there are a lot of people that are actually at home, but home is actually their place of work. But imagine they're at home and not working.
Is this a Dr. Seuss novel? What the fuck is going on? Listen, this week, Dad, we are talking about Queen Elizabeth and fire, and no, not about Gough Whitlam getting fired by the Queen. That's a whole different thing. It's the Queen's birthday holiday. Last time we were all in Thailand together, because you and Mum have a house over in Thailand. It was Harry and Meghan's royal wedding, and Tegan and I were there, and if you recall, I was pretty insistent that the four of us, you know, bundle up and do the whole British royal wedding thing properly. So we drove down to this local mall and we found, oh God, it was
flour.
Really difficult. Yeah, we had to find flour because Mum was going to make scones. And then we got the closest thing we could get to clotted cream and jam. And I used a semi-legal process to get the BBC iPlayer playing. And we watched the whole thing.
Live.
Did you enjoy it?
What I did enjoy was the pomp and ceremony.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked a lot of it. I'm not a staunch royalist.
Yeah.
But I'm not. I mean, I think there are arguments for and against. But I kind of think, having been over to London and actually stood outside Buckingham Palace, you know, I question whether or not, I don't see anything wrong with some of the tradition that we have in this world. I think it'd be a little bit sad, because then you're not sort of acknowledging history. And history is everything that's behind us up until now. And I think there are positive aspects of that organisation, evident by not just how I feel, but...
Now, listen, I want to bring us back to Thailand. So we were in Thailand watching the royal wedding, and we watched everything. Like, we watched the guests come in, we watched the commentary from the little commentary box, and, I mean, we'd been there because... Tegan, myself, you, and Mum went on a bus tour about 2 years ago now, and it was around Christmas, and we headed on this bus tour, which was a really weird call. And I believe the first stop was Windsor Castle.
Correct.
Yeah. And yeah, we got to Windsor, and we realized we had about 20 minutes, so we ran up through the township, and we kind of ran up that side road that goes along the side of the estate, and that's basically where the guests headed in. So, and that is also the same day that I proposed to Tegan later on in Bath.
I mean, the grenadiers that carry those machine guns on at the castle.
Yeah.
Do you recall there was that tourist with her back to them and she was taking photographs and they were marching toward her and they were screaming at her to get out of the way.
And she didn't move.
And she didn't move and they basically just mowed her over.
Yeah, I remember.
That was very interesting. I found that quite fascinating.
That was very interesting. But the point is, we were in Thailand watching the royal wedding, and I was going to ask you, Dad, about the police and firefighters in Thailand. Because, I mean, at one point, a couple of months ago potentially, you implied that you were considering enlisting in the emergency services in Thailand.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, they're called the tourist police.
Right.
There'll be people listening that'll think they're a bunch of wankers, and that's fair enough. But in Thailand, if you get in trouble with the local constabulary, you've got a shit pile of problems on many, many levels. So what the Thai authorities have done, which I think's really, really good, in major tourist areas, they have created these tourist police. And these police come from various backgrounds, various nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you have a problem in Thailand and you, like, let's imagine you've been mugged or you've been conned or you've been involved in an altercation or a car accident, how good would it be to be able to get some police, perhaps even from your country, that can act as sort of the go-between?
Wouldn't that cause sort of diplomatic incidents if there were disagreements?
Or? Oh, well, no, because it's a very, very specific role in Thailand, because I've downloaded all the paperwork to actually become a tourist police officer.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What's the uniform like?
It's okay. I'm not doing it for the uniform or the machismo.
I don't know.
I think it's a really wonderful way to immerse yourself in the local culture and really get a great sense on the ground as to what's happening. And I think it's a great service. So in certain towns in Thailand, they block off the streets and they then call them walking streets.
Yeah.
And they've got this amazing, great atmosphere. There's a great sense of sort of jocularity. Not quite sure whether that's the right word, but it's a pretty cool word. And you feel secure knowing that you've got both the Thai police and you've got some international police. They don't have police powers as such, but as I said, they're the conduit between the victim and the Royal Thai Police.
It's kind of a liaison officer.
I've
got photos of them here. You get a little cool lanyard and stuff, but it does say tourist police on what is ostensibly a bib. But I guess my question is, what about the fire brigade? Could you theoretically enroll in the fire brigade in Thailand?
Well, here's the thing. In Hua Hin or Hua Hin, depending on how you decide to enunciate that particular city's name, that's a town in southern Thailand where the royal family have their summer palace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they no doubt have summer palaces all over the place, but this is a particularly beautiful town. And we have a house in Hua Hin up in the mountains. In the mornings, you can hear the monkeys in the forest. Christine and I were driving a few months ago at the back of our place. And it's sort of up in the mountains. There's beautiful sea breeze. It's sort of about maybe 3 kilometers from the ocean.
Yeah, so it's up the hill, right?
And it's very beautiful. And we were riding and driving through the jungle, kind of. And we came across, we looked ahead and we saw what appeared to be a cyclist. Have I told you this story?
No, you haven't.
Okay, there was a cyclist on the road and he'd come off his bike. He was lying face down and I honestly believed that he was dead. A car had hit him and the car had left, as is often the case anywhere in the world. So it was basically a hit and run. I pulled up about 50 metres prior to sort of him, his body on the road. There was no one around. And I sort of set up this safe corridor for me to exit the vehicle and then get down to him to check on him. And he was lying there. There was a lot of blood. He was motionless. And I was convinced that he was deceased. And, you know, we didn't have a phone on us. And, oh God, that's one of the things about being in any foreign country. It's really important to at least know the emergency phone numbers if you do have a phone.
Yeah.
And it seemed like minutes. And I rolled him over and he was unconscious. And I was just about to contemplate, I was just getting his vital statistics and thinking about doing some CPR. But in the back of my mind, I was also thinking about the mass of blood. There was a lot of blood. He'd sustained fairly serious injuries, mainly facial injuries. And then I was trying to think to myself, you know, even if I could do mouth-to-mouth, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get a seal, because when you do mouth-to-mouth, if the person has sustained serious facial injuries, like, you know, their lips have sort of torn apart and their nose is split open and, you know, maybe a couple of facial bones are sticking out. I mean, can you imagine if you could get a seal and then you blow into their mouth and the air that's supposed to be going into their lungs just blows out the side of their face? You with me?
Is that what happened?
No.
Oh.
But I'm just giving you sort of a hypothesis of what can happen in terms of when you do blow into someone's mouth, you need to get a really good seal. And when you're doing CPR, at least when I was in the emergency services, if you had to do CPR on a baby, mm-hmm. you actually put your mouth over their nose and mouth.
Right.
And you'd get a seal and then you'd blow.
That's how I kiss.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, when I say blow lungs up, I don't mean to the point of exploding.
Of course, of course.
Okay, as if this story is not kind of a little bit odd, not odd, but it was surreal because I'm in the middle of the jungle by myself. Christine's sort of standing looking, and it was quite a sad sort of scenario. We felt sorry for this cyclist. Mm-hmm. And he was kitted out in the best European road racing. He had a really, really good bike, carbon fiber. I noticed all these things. And while I'm on my knees preparing, like putting him in a recovery position and trying to get him ready to go, mm-hmm. I looked to my right, and I want you to try and guess what I saw. You can ask me questions, and I'll give you hints.
Okay.
And believe you me, this is quite... It's weird what I saw.
All right. Was it a human being or an animal?
No, an animal.
Okay. Was it a monkey?
No.
A dog?
No.
An elephant?
Correct.
What?
I saw the biggest elephant I've ever seen in my life. And at this point, some of the listeners might be going, for fuck's sake, John, get a grip of yourself.
Yep.
But no, because Christine saw it too. The biggest elephant, and it was black. It was super, super dark. Not grey, not brown. It was black. And it must have been, I reckon it was 12 to 15 feet tall.
Now, you are a monster. I mean, God bless
you. I'm prone to exaggeration.
You are prone to exaggeration.
I agree. But this was a motherfucker of an elephant. Jeez. And there it was, just looking at me.
Yeah.
And I just thought, how... I mean, as if the situation wasn't weird enough to be at the first responder in a foreign country on a back road and then getting ready to do some CPR, and then all of a sudden there's this huge elephant. Now, elephants are, or can be, incredibly dangerous. It was on a path... It had come out of the jungle, and it was basically just, from my perspective, it was basically looking at us. I don't know what it was thinking, but that made the whole situation, it changed the dynamics considerably, because an elephant on the run, imagine if it had have just come over and just squashed me.
Right.
That would have been quite depressing.
Well, we wouldn't be recording this, for one.
Well, it might not have killed me. I might have just had... Major crushed, I said rubs, but of course there's no such word as rubs. Well, there is, but I meant ribs.
Excellent work, Dad.
Okay, now, something weird happened then. The guy began to move.
Right.
He wasn't dead. I thought he was dead.
Yep.
But he wasn't dead.
Could you run us through his injuries as you saw them?
Oh, major, major. He'd lost, he had a lot of bones exposed. He'd basically just driven. He'd basically used his face as a brake on the bitumen, and he'd left a snail trail of his face.
No,
like his lips.
No,
and
no, no.
His nose had gone. No. So I had all that plus the elephant. And okay, as if this story isn't surreal enough,
uh-huh.
out of virtually nowhere appeared three. Female nuns. They just appeared. I'm not saying they appeared in a miraculous sense. It turns out there was a convent nearby. Right. These three nuns in white just kind of, all of a sudden, they were just standing there. Because obviously I was fairly preoccupied
with the elephant.
I was keeping one eye on the elephant
yeah,
and one eye on the guy, which is weird because eyes actually work simultaneously. So if I could actually do... what a chameleon can do
mm-hmm.
and move one eye independently of the other, I could have done that.
Well, but if you were a chameleon, I mean, the nuns wouldn't have seen you. They would have just seen the
I would have just blended into the roadway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they were lovely, and they came up and they caressed my forelock.
What is wrong with you?
I had to say it. I've always wanted to put that in a sentence.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. So the nuns presumably don't have the kind of medical know-how to actually help.
No, but they had a mobile phone.
Great.
Because these nuns were keyed into the 21st century.
Sure. All right. So they call the emergency services.
Okay. Now, what happens in Thailand is that the listeners may or may not recall And hopefully they will recall that in the early days in England, particularly in Paris, they had every insurance company had its own fire brigade.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the fire marks on the front of the buildings. And if the fire mark was current,
yes.
The fire engine would rock up, i.e. some guys would push a little, like an oversized billy cart and throw buckets of water into the fire, which was generally, you know, pretty useless.
Uh-huh.
Taking that situation, that story, and then sort of transposing it into Thailand is that every single hospital in Thailand has their own ambulance service.
Gotcha.
So if you go, and here's a fun fact for everyone listening, and I say this unashamedly, if you're in Thailand and you have an accident, and the chances are pretty high that you will, in your dying breath, make sure you always ask to go to the Bangkok hospital, because it's an incredible international hospital and it's top shelf and they've got very good ambulances. You don't want to go to one of the local hospitals because your chances of survival are slim and your chances of picking up a secondary infection with the greatest of respect is amplified somewhat.
Right.
So Bangkok hospital is the way to go. Make sure, and here's something that I must stress to everyone, and you all know it. I know you all know it, but some people still go overseas, but get travel insurance.
Mm.
Because if you don't and you're in Bali and you come off the motorbike and you need to get back to Australia, you're fucked.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Your family will be bled dry.
Yeah,
okay. Because if you need a nurse and a doctor on board, they will remove seats in business class to get you back.
Right.
And try and figure out what that's going to cost. And also, if you're riding a motorbike in Asia, and probably anywhere else in the world, a lot of people from Australia go to Bali, 15, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, adults. They hop on bikes. They've got all the insurance. They have a bad accident. The first thing the Australian insurance company wants to see is your current, if you're from Sydney, they want to see your New South Wales motorcycle license.
Okay.
Because if you don't have one, you're fucked.
Right. I was going to say, what happened then? What happened next in the story of the
car? Oh, Christine and I left.
You just left?
Well, the ambos rocked up.
Did you have to fill out any paperwork or anything?
God, we just hopped in the car and pissed off.
Wow. Where did you go after that? Do you remember?
We went to an incredible restaurant and I drowned my misery in some Thai salads and beautiful cold brew.
God, I miss the food there. But I mean, one of the best things about being in Thailand was the fact that you could just, separate from things. And one of the great things about the royal wedding was it felt like escapism, and it was Harry and Meghan, and it was very, it was very different. But the reason I wanted to bring us back to the royal thing, partly because it's, this is the Queen's birthday episode of Loose Units, but also there was a very, very, very famous fire back in 1992.
Correct.
So this is the fire that broke out in Windsor Castle. I'm not sure if not everyone will know this, but basically Windsor Castle was on fire. And it was a whole shitstorm. It started in the Queen's... She has this private chapel, and it started in about at about 11 o'clock in the morning. And apparently, there was a curtain that went up. And then, effectively, there was massive fire damage there. And I remember seeing footage of this happening. I was extremely, extremely young. But the reason I was interested in this fire, apart from all of the associated kind of weirdness of this, is that because of the large amount of damage, naturally it incurred a lot of, you know, they needed to basically pay for a lot of this damage. And this is the first time that the Queen actually paid tax. So,
and also opened up
Buckingham Palace.
Buckingham Palace for tourists.
Yeah, that's right.
To facilitate the extraordinary cost of that particular, which was around about... £35 million
Yeah.
And how that fire actually started was a curtain, and it actually brushed up against a spotlight.
A spotlight, okay.
And it ignited. Now, I've gone through the facts of the story in some minute detail, and I've tried to look at it from three perspectives: a citizen's perspective, a firefighter's perspective, and a police officer's perspective. And the castle had a fire crew of 26 permanent, and they were based 2 miles away, which is, I guess, around about 3 to 4 kilometres away. But the thing is, Paul, that fire came up and they knew it was a fire. I mean, it's all very well talking about things in hindsight, and I'm quite aware of the whole principle of hindsight, and some might say, including myself on occasions, that it's not a fair cop to say, oh, yes, but... And we tend to do that a lot. Because we're looking back on an event in the calmness of the present. But one thing that jumped out at me when I read all the facts about that particular incident, which lasted around about 12 hours, which gives you some idea of the intensity, but it took them, it took the castle fire controller 22 minutes before he notified the external fire brigade.
Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. Why is that? They may have thought that they could control the fire, but it turned out to be, in terms of appliances, they ended up with 39 appliances. And prior to that, since 1974 in London, that was the highest number of appliances ever called to any fire in London since 1974 up until that moment in 92 was 30 appliances.
Right.
And they ended up having 39 appliances for that particular fire. Fortunately, they'd managed to move a lot of the very valuable paintings. They were working on sort of rehousing and restoring, and also they'd lent a lot of these paintings. And a lot of the artworks in these institutions are priceless. They're certainly irreplaceable. And the fireys did a great job in trying to... They had about 250 firemen working. And the fire actually, they got it under control. And then what quite often happens, it then reignited. And that reminds me of a story in Brookvale on the Northern Beaches. Some months ago, there was a storage facility. And it was a major fuck-up. And that is that... And it happens occasionally, is that the fireys... that rocked up, they thought that it was under control. Mm. We may have touched on this story, and they basically sent everyone home, and they're just chilling, and they hadn't put it out, and it reignited. Jesus. And it turned into a monster fire that went for 4 days. The damage it caused, they lost the entire building, but the businesses around there were all shut down. And how embarrassing. Being the station officer, I assume, at that point, who'd made the call, you know, where he thought that it was done and dusted.
Yeah.
That's the thing with fire. You've got to be, you know, vigilant, when fire is when bushies and CFA and all the guys and girls get out there into the bush and they, you know, some of these fires can burn, well, you know, the peat fires. There are some peat fires. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are some fires that have been burning for thousands of years underground.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
I know about these. What interests me, Dad, is that the castle had its own kind of in-house fire brigade.
Yeah, 20 guys that had, and girls. I'm not sure what the mix was in terms of sex, but they had 6 permanent and 14 sort of volunteers. 2 miles away. They were in stables. You know, that's where they were housed, their appliance, etc.
Now, just to be clear, the firefighters weren't horses in firefighting costumes, were they?
No.
Because that would have been ineffectual, but absolutely adorable. How do you feel about animals dressed up as firefighters? Do you think it's cute or do you think it's disrespectful?
I think it's on par with firemen dressing up as animals.
Imagine going to a fire and then suddenly...
Imagine trying to fit firemen who are dressed up as horses in the back of the appliance.
Well, but it was just like a pantomime horse. You just step the bottom half and the top half out, and then when you get out of the fire engine, you have hoofs. You can't operate.
I always feel sorry. I always, whenever I see in theatrical performances or street performances where there's a horse or a donkey, you know that it's two people in there, and I always feel sorry for the guy at the back.
Fair enough.
Because have you seen the position he has to take in? To be the back of a horse?
Yeah, it's got to have his head right up the first person's bottom.
Correct.
Yep, just for stability.
Mm.
Yep. Anyway, so they have a in-house fire brigade, a small one.
Mm.
I mean, first of all, do you find it odd that the dedicated fire brigade didn't actually manage to keep it under control without having to call
on? It's not a matter of keep it under control. I think, look, when you're talking about... I come back to the in hindsight... sort of caveat that I shall invoke on what I'm about to say. I think 22 minutes seems to be quite a long time to actually get them to respond. That's the exterior organization.
Yep.
Who'd be on standby? Obviously, that's what fire is waiting for.
Yes.
And it is a very significant structure, as you know. And it's on a hill. Don't forget that. Remember when we were queuing for... What seemed to be half a day.
Yeah.
You recall that when you sort of get in, you're walking all the time, up, up, up.
Yeah.
And as we all know, the principles of fire is that the fire
climbs
and it just wants to go hard. And the beautiful tapestries and all the timber, you may recall the beautiful interiors.
Oh, I know what they should have done, Dad. They should have just made it queue for a ticket. That would have bought them at least half an hour.
Yeah. Have I ever said to you, you're an ideas person, Paul?
Yes, you have. Mm. Thank you very much. Yes. I'm just curious because I found out how much water they used on this thing. So they used 7 million litres. And apparently, like you said, you know when they have to kind of get water from... what's it called when they refill the
drafting.
Tanks? They drafted.
Well, from a static supply.
Yeah, but they drafted from... So they used the mains water supplies and then they had a reservoir-fed hydrant. But this is interesting. They drafted from a swimming pool, a pond and the River Thames.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that great?
It's so good.
The great thing I like is that the River Thames is a very working class river. It's filthy, it's surrounded by poverty, and that filthy, filthy poor person water is just drowning the antiquities of the royal family. It feels a little poetic, or at least maybe tragic, I'm not sure.
And also, you've got to be aware of building collapse. During that fire, the floors and ceilings, they had a false ceiling in one of the big rooms, it collapsed. And they were very, very concerned. On two occasions in that fire, they lost contact with three firefighters each time.
Yes.
And then that slowed the whole firefighting process down. As we've mentioned in relation to arson, you know, when in America in particular, when they dig the hole and fill it with broken glass and nails and all sorts of things, and they suspend the balloons above the ceiling full of petrol so that when the fires are inside and the fire really gets going, not only have they got all the terrible drama of trying to put the fire out, but then occasionally these balloons drop down and ignite and just... Oh, it's diabolical.
Jesus.
All part of the process to slow the fires down.
I was interested in the fact that pretty much everything in these places is flammable because a lot of Tudor architecture and everything, it's all tapestries and it's
and
timber. Architraves and timber.
Yeah.
And we've been into, obviously the bits of Windsor Castle that didn't burn. And we've been through the chapel where the wedding took place and it's all so old and so flammable.
I know. And so beautiful.
And it's really beautiful and it's tricky when history burns because, you know, I mean, I know that when Notre Dame went up...
we were there.
We were literally
We saw
them.
We were there when the fires were there. That was...
Yeah, we saw it burn. And it's interesting because we were having this discussion and I know that a lot of... French billionaires and philanthropists and people around the world were suddenly donating all of their money to try and save this thing.
Hmm.
But these same people wouldn't raise a dollar to stop the Amazon rainforest burning. And I find it interesting what people will and won't throw their weight behind in terms of saving it. It's interesting because I think a lot of people have very mixed feelings about the royals. But I think even the most staunch, you know, anti-royalist probably wouldn't enjoy seeing, you know, 400-year-old tapestries burn.
No, it'd be very, very upsetting. I mean, the listeners also may recall that at least when I... Because, you know, when I left the fire brigade, I got that job with fire and security at the Sydney Opera House.
Yes.
And the Sydney Opera House, I don't know what it's like now, but back in the 1990s, the Sydney Opera House had its own internal fire brigade.
Right.
And it's got its own hospital. It's got over 1,100 rooms.
Jesus.
Because they need to be able to respond. You can't comprehend. I'd go so far as to say that if the Sydney Opera House burnt down, I feel that it's actually irreplaceable. I think that they'd be hard pressed to rebuild it.
They certainly wouldn't have problems with drafting it. I mean, you know,
no, because they got the unlimited supply.
Yeah.
But I remember going down into the big engine room, the big pump rooms at the Sydney Opera House, and they had some very, very unusual fire protection systems in place that I'd never seen before.
Mm.
They had systems whereby, you know, how you buildings and fire is hook into the mains, and the mains are the big pipes that run through all our streets.
Yeah.
That's the mains. And ultimately, that goes back to Warragamba Dam, which is our major water supply.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is so amazing. And I've just remembered, and I remember at the time being shown this, and I thought, this is so fascinating. They actually had, and I'm not sure whether they still do, they had two independent water supplies coming into the Sydney Opera House, both from the mains, but separate supplies. That's so fascinating. You can't imagine when on earth a main would fail. The only time a main can kind of fail is sometimes in a very, very large fire. You've got these officers, they're not firefighters, they work for the Water Authority.
Yeah.
I think they're called Water Inspection Officers or some water type officer. They have the power to turn the mains off.
Right.
Which is an almighty power because it means no house has water.
Mm.
But sometimes they might do that in a major incident to divert what little more water they do have left in the mains, or if there's been a major incident that has actually... there are cases, of course, where when they're doing excavation work, sometimes they'll dig up a main and it'll create... I mean, the pressure is just... It's mighty.
Right.
Mighty pressure. And they might need to then, up the road, the water... That special officer will... He's got a special large key and he'll put it into the ground and he'll turn the actual mains off at that point.
Right.
But these are big decisions. And the thing about these decisions, of course, is they've got to be made very, very quickly. So you need people with almost absolute authority to come in.
Yeah.
Like the fire is that have got the power to push a boat off and sink it or demolish buildings either side. I know I've said this to you before, and I hope the listeners... Because I think it's so fascinating, and that is that in any situation, at least it was the case, which I think is kind of funny and sweet, and that is that no matter what the situation is, whether it be a siege or a fire, no matter how cataclysmic an event, there's that one person that can't be stopped, at least in law. They may have changed it, but mm-hmm. when I was in both services, there was that one particular person that you couldn't stop them going through. And you know who that is?
The Queen?
No, the male man.
Oh, shit.
You cannot stop the male. Isn't that wonderful? And that's actually by royal warrant through the reigning monarch.
Wow. Well, you are getting so good at this and drawing us back on topic. I actually had one last royal-related thing to run by you, and it might be by the by, but you've actually, in your time working at the Opera House, you had a meal and got to spend some time. And you've told the story on the podcast before with Gough Whitlam and his wife.
Hmm.
And this is very recent news, but an Australian court ruled a couple of days ago that they have to release letters between Queen Elizabeth and her local representative in the 70s, which is probably going to shed some pretty juicy light and some gossip on the sacking of the Prime Minister Gough Whitlam.
It'll be interesting, no doubt.
It'll be very interesting, and I would be curious to say, because recently the Queen's done a few things that I haven't loved, and it would be interesting to see if she was, you know, salty over Gough Whitlam, or if she was... I just want to find out what her insights were, because it's so rare to actually hear. Because this podcast is all about just saying how you feel, you know, just getting everything out there and being completely transparent, right? But the whole point, it seems, of the Queen's MO is just obfuscation of emotions and facts. And it would be really nice to hear how she actually felt about the sacking of Gough Whitlam. Because I think he was a stand-up guy, and I'm just very curious about that.
Well, Paul, I thought that we're coming to the end of the Fire Brigade season and we're going to be going to the funeral industry. The whole story about how that industry works, no holes barred, that I can assure you and the listeners. But I thought we're going to be touching on a fairly heavy subject in the next week or two, that you and I both know about it, but we're sort of preparing for that.
Yes.
But as a lead up to that, perhaps next week I will tell the listeners a supernatural story from the New South Wales Fire Brigades.
That is so
incredible that when I heard the story from a very senior officer who's a dear friend of mine, he told me last Friday, and my body was shrouded in goosebumps at 9 a.m. And I just looked at him and I said, I can't believe you've never told me that story. And that's a story that the listeners have something to look forward to.
I cannot wait. It's a cracker.
Paul, incredible news about the book that I'm not allowed to mention. But someone amazing that we can't mention may or may not have done a bit of a dedication on the cover.
Oh, yes. Someone.
And you sent me that photo and I literally shat cubic zirconia out of my buttocks.
If you could shit something more valuable, that would be very helpful for us moving forward. I think, yes, someone very famous and very lovely has done a fantastic cover quote for us describing what they thought of the book. Spoiler alert, they really liked it. So that's really exciting. I did send Dad the photo and I did hear him crapping out semi-precious stones.
No, so I how the fuck did you do it?
Well,
he's a household name.
He is a household name. Yes. Yep.
So no. I've got to really pull back now because I don't want to.
Well, it's been a very, very big, exciting episode of Loose Units. Thanks so much for listening to our Queen's Birthday special episode of Loose Units, the podcast. And if you haven't already, please, I know I say it every week and I know Dad and I are harping on it, but we are getting so close to release date. So if you haven't got your copy of Electric Blue, go online, grab it. Do not skip this part of the podcast. I know your fingers hovering over the skip part. So just grab a copy of Electric Blue, buy it, pre-order it, go to Booktopia if you want to grab it at a really good price, and we'll see you very, very soon for more Loose Units. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.